Welcome to the City Confessions. I'm Marianne Yip, a native New Yorker, and I'm here to discuss all the thoughts that go through the minds of people living in New York City. Since I'm a native who was born and raised in the city that never sleeps, I come across people who are constantly in a rush. I would like to take a moment to sit down and talk about what's on their minds and what keeps them up at night. So sit back and let's dive into these confessions of people I know and people I just met. Hi guys, welcome back to the next episode of The City Confessions. I hope you guys are doing well. Today I'm super excited because I have Janice Trezino. She's the Vice President of Product Development at Scentbird. And Scentbird is a monthly perfume subscription box service. So hi Janice, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Did you stay indoors with this snowstorm that we had?
Actually, it was my husband and my 1 year wedding anniversary. So we took a little weekend trip. So we escaped the storm.
Oh, that's so lovely. Congratulations on the anniversary.
Thank you.
So why don't we begin by having you introduce yourself to the listeners. Tell us who you are, what you do, and what your relationship is with New York City.
Yeah. So I'm Janice. Hi, guys. I'm the Vice President of Product Development for Scentbird. And Scentbird is, like Marianne was saying, a fragrance subscription service. But we also have several of our own brands that I also oversee from a development perspective. So we have a facial skincare brand called Good Habit. We have a color cosmetics line called Deck of Scarlet. We have a fine fragrance brand called Confessions of a Rebel. And next month, we are launching a new, next month in April. Next month is March. So in April, we're launching another clean and causal fine fragrance brand called Sanctuary. And basically, my job is super fun. I am in charge of trend forecasting and understanding what is going on in the world, starting really at a higher up broad level, looking at consumer mindset, and then figuring out how to translate what's happening in the world to a skincare product or a color product or a new fine fragrance. So my team is really responsible from everything from creating an idea in our brain and then everything that it takes to actually launch a product to the market. So we will make the formulas, we make the packaging, we write the copy. We work really closely with the creative department to help them take the photos and understand the messaging that needs to come out. So basically I get to make makeup and skincare and fragrance all day long, which is pretty cool.
That sounds so much fun. I love seeing the creativity in these roles, especially when you are doing it from scratch and then seeing the product and the outcome. I think that's so exciting. So have you always been into beauty and product development, or tell me, how did you even get into this role?
Yeah. So I am what we call, I guess, an industry baby. So my mother is a chemist by trade. And she was heading up the research and development of She used to run all of the research and development for limited brands. So Bath & Body Works, Victoria's Secret, Pink. She was the head of their innovation department. And so I kind of just always grew up in beauty and in makeup. You know, some of my earliest memories are like 4 years old, sitting in the product closet at Bath & Body Works, just playing with all of the body lotions and body mists and things like that. And while I do not have anywhere close to the scientific mathematical brain that my mother has, I am kind of the other end of the spectrum. So within product development, there's always a creative who has a basic understanding of formulations and helps come up with the idea and speak to a partner chemist. And then that chemist is the one who will take the idea that's in my head and actually figure out how to make it happen into a formula. So it's kind of all I've ever known. And I think it might be the only thing I'm good at, honestly. I've just always done this. I've been in the industry without trying to age myself for over 16 years at this point. So I kind of just, you know, was born into it.
That's amazing. So throughout this journey, when have you felt the most challenge?
Oh, I mean, I think last year was probably the most challenging year we've ever faced. Obviously, the whole pandemic is hard for everyone, and super fortunate to work in an industry where I was able to, you know, still keep an employment, keep a job. But what people, you know, don't understand is for product development, working at home is not that simple. So for most people, working at home means just having a laptop stationed at like your dining room table and working. But for me, I had to actually build an office in my apartment with, you know, floor to ceiling bookshelves, because everything I do is physical. So physical samples of a formula are sent to me, pieces of packaging are sent to me, fragrances are sent to me, color samples are sent to me. And so everything we do is very much like touch and feel and try. And it's impossible to do that without getting those physical pieces in our hands. So I think it was quite challenging throughout this year to figure out how we do a job where really it requires myself and my whole team to kind of be together in one room, looking at things as a group, as a little family, and then going from that to, you know, always being with each other to basically not seeing each other in person for over a year. So that was definitely a challenge for sure.
Yeah, I actually think it's great to have you on because a lot of people don't know the behind the scenes of how to get a product, you know, on the shelves, how to get the product, the outcome. So what exactly is that process like in terms of timing, in terms of how many people are involved? And yeah, like, let's say you have an idea right now of like starting a certain product, like a eyeshadow palette. From today, when the idea is in your mind, what happens afterwards?
Yeah. So what happens first is the idea is in your mind. And we create what we call like a concept deck. So everything that we do, even if it's for color, we want to make sure it's grounded in data. So for example, an eyeshadow palette is a great one. It's actually something myself and my team are working on right now. One of the key insights that we have that we know from our research is that even before the pandemic, customers are really interested in playing up their eyes and, you know, making them a little bit bolder and more interesting, different kind of colors and textures and finishes. We saw a couple years ago the resurgence of this pressed glitter, eyeshadow toppers, playing with like metallics and high shine versus mattes and things like that. I think now more than ever, the eyes are our main area of focus because most of us are going outside wearing masks. So that's really the only thing that you have an opportunity to show the outside world. So we start with the general kind of grounding it in data. And then we dig even deeper and look at what's trending from a color perspective right now, which is important, but even more important is where's that evolution of color going to be in 2 years? Because that's the challenge, right? If something's trending right now and then we launch it 2 years later using the trends of today, it's not interesting. It's not new. So you have to be able to understand what's happening now, but also be able to, you kind of get like a gut instinct after you're doing it for a little while, understand how the color trends are going to evolve. And then you go out and you look for, we call them benchmarks. So benchmarks can be anything. They can be a Pantone chip. They can be the cap of a bottle. They can be a competitive eyeshadow. And the benchmarks are really what we're looking to match from a color perspective. So we'll gather all of our benchmarks. We'll send them to our formula vendor. We'll say, we want you to match this shade exactly, but high shine finish. We want you to match this shade, but make it pressed glitter. Kind of go through the whole thing, explaining to them how each and every shade within the palette should look. And at that point, they begin to develop the eyeshadows. And they send us samples, which is where, I know you can't see my office, but I probably have around 200 bins all touch labels full of different, you know, submissions. And then we are color experts by trade. So there is a specific way that you evaluate colors. You swatch them on your arms in a certain order. You have to look at your arm. If you take your arm and put it straight out and you're looking at like the inside forearm of your arm, you would tilt your arm all the way down towards the floor. And that's how you look at the undertone of a color. And then you look at it dead on, and that's how you look at the, like, the mass tone of a color. And so we have to check to make sure the mass tone is correct, the undertone is correct, the overall shade is right. If it's not, it's our job to get on the phone with the chemist, redirect them, say, I think you should add 3% more red, take out 2% yellow. We need to boost the overall color altogether. Like, there's different things. Until you get to a point where you have the shade that is exactly perfect the way you want it to look, and then you kind of move on to the next one. And if you have an eyeshadow palette that has 12 colors, you do that 12 times, you know, until you get those shades perfect. And then from there, my team is also in charge of package development. So I have a packaging engineer who sits on my team. I'll sit down with him and say, we have a 12-well eyeshadow palette that we're launching in October of 2022. I really want something interesting with this palette. Can you please go out to our packaging vendors and have them give us their latest eyeshadow palette innovations, and see is there refillables? Is there removable mirrors? Are there things that I've never even thought of? Can we make it 3D? All kinds of crazy stuff, you know? And we basically sit with all of our vendors. We look at all of the packaging options. And we figure out how we want to put it together to make the most interesting product that we can. And that whole thing will take upwards of like 12 to 24 months, usually closer to like 18 to 24 months from start to finish.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think the hardest part, at least for me, just hearing the process, is being able to kind of foreshadow what the trends are. Of course, what's happening now and what's trending now may or may not be relevant in, like you said, 1 year, 2 years. So it's really interesting to see how that plays out. But I want to talk about social media, because as we know, social media is so huge, especially with brands launching and getting the awareness and PR and the buzz. So I'm not sure, I know your role is not specifically with social media, but just being from the brand perspective, mm-hmm. how do you think social media has really elevated the brand? Because if I'm not mistaken, when did Scentbird launch?
Scentbird launched around 6 years ago, 2014.
No, 2014. And that's the time I feel personally that social media really took off.
Yes.
So Scentbird obviously was kind of in it at the right time, in my personal opinion. So just from you working with the brand and just your expertise, what is your, I guess, perspective on the role of social media and the pros and cons?
I mean, social media, YouTube in particular for Scentbird, has been invaluable in growing and scaling our brand. When Scentbird came out 6 or 7 years ago, nobody was doing what we're doing. When we look at the market now, there's a ton of copycats who have cropped up that are really like kind of taking our website and just changing out our name for their name and really taking the whole business model. But we were the absolute first ones to kind of invent this business model, specifically when it pertains to fragrance. And so we opted to go with YouTube for a couple reasons. People didn't understand what we were doing. Because if you think about beauty as a whole, and I was talking to someone about this the other day, fragrance is the last beauty category to evolve. Color cosmetics has moved digital. They've moved away from the traditional, you know, quote unquote model look of beauty. Same with skincare, same with personal care, but fragrance has stayed firmly rooted in being kind of a retail play where you need to go into a store, you need to have someone attack you with 75 different fragrances on blotters and then get nose blind and then feel really overwhelmed and then hope to God you make the right decision and then go home and hope you still like it. And if you do, then you can continue to make your repurchases online. But it was always one of those things where like you had to go into a store to physically smell it to mm-hmm. understand what you liked. Otherwise, it was just too big of an investment. And so Scentbread was the first one to say there has to be a better way to shop. Every other category within beauty has caught up. Why hasn't fragrance? And so we kind of invented it. But like I was saying, YouTube is important because we needed to explain to customers why a fragrance subscription is such a smart idea, why it's so great that, you know, you don't need to have a signature fragrance. You change your clothes every day. You change your makeup every day. You change your hair every day. Why not change your fragrance too? Everything else is associated with your mood and how you feel. But for some reason, it's been drilled into our heads that you're supposed to have a signature fragrance and this is what you're supposed to wear every day. And we said, I don't know if that's true anymore. Let's try to change that perspective. Another thing we really wanted to showcase via YouTube is we have a really unique case that's kind of a twist up, twist down motion. And consumers didn't know how to use it. So they were kind of trying to pull it and do all kinds of stuff. So we had to make tutorial how-to videos. So I think with the YouTube, what we saw was people were able to fully explain everything about the platform and the proposition and why it was so great and why it made sense. They were able to show you how to use the case and explain how everything works, and really kind of help ease consumers into an idea that at the time was super revolutionary and no one had really heard of.
Yeah, I agree. I remember when I stumbled across Scentbird, this was definitely years ago when, again, social media was blowing up. And I thought the idea was just genius because, like what you mentioned, I personally love to smell good. I feel like if you're in a bad mood and you just spray on some fragrance, your mood just instantly improves. And I love having options. So I hate to just have like one scent, and I'm the type that get pretty bored easily. So it's great to kind of, you know, try it and then see what you like, because the only way is really to go into stores. Also, I feel like one thing that's really difficult, at least for me, is to describe scents. Like, I feel like I need to be able to like physically smell it. Like somebody says, oh, the top notes are this and the middle notes, I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Can I tell you something? It doesn't even matter though, because This is, I don't know if I should say this, but I'm going to, because that's what I do. All of those notes. So for the first like 6 years of my career, I worked at a fragrance house. I did trend forecasting and fine fragrance development. Those notes that the salespeople are telling you are created by a marketer in an office smelling the fragrance and saying, I think this is what people would like the most. They're not the only things that are in that fragrance. There's plenty of other stuff. And the way that every fragrance will smell different on every person because of the way that it interacts with your skin's chemistry. And to really find a fragrance that you love, it's almost impossible to do it in a department store setting, because fragrances, when you initially spray them, they have something called top notes. And top notes are usually citrus notes or fruit notes. They're a little bit more bright and effervescent, but they flash off within the first 5 minutes or so. And then you start to smell into what we call is the heart of the fragrance, which is usually like florals or green notes or mosses and things like that. And then after that, you get to what we call is the dry down. And the dry down are like woods, amber, vanilla, things that like boost all of the other notes, give the fragrance staying power. But you have to sit with the fragrance and continuously smell it for, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes to fully understand how it's going to evolve on your skin, how it's going to interact with your skin, and also decide if you like it. And fragrances are really expensive, right? Good fragrances are so much money. And then you have the salesperson, like you were saying, staring at you as you're smelling it on yourself and telling you the notes, and you're like, that's not what I smell. Am I not smelling it right? Is there something wrong with me? And then you almost feel guilty to say, oh, I don't know if I like this, even though that salesperson didn't make it, but they're like watching you with such pressure that it just becomes like a really awkward experience, you know?
Yeah, that's so true. So wait, I'm really curious, do expiration dates for perfumes vary, or is there like a general expiration duration?
As a general rule of thumb, most things in beauty, unless it has like an SPF in it, are good for 3 years minimum, but fragrances can usually go even longer than that. If you store them in a cool, dry place.
And is it true over time it loses its like strength in terms of the scent or no?
No, that is not true.
Okay. And I'm curious to know, what is your favorite fragrance at the moment?
My favorite fragrance is, I swear by two Le Labo fragrances. So I love Santal 33 and I love Tay Noir. Those are my absolute favorites.
Amazing. Okay, so I want to shift gears a little, and I always invite my guests to come on, and then I ask, what keeps you up at night? It seems like a really simple question, but just hearing you speak about your job, I can tell that you're definitely a busy woman. So we're sitting down now just to chat, just to make ourselves more human in a way. Mm-hmm. So right now, whether or not it's related to your personal life or your professional life, if you can share what's on your mind, what's stressing you out, what comes to mind when you think about that?
Okay, so from a, I can do personal and professional?
Yes, whatever you like.
So personally, I know that I said my husband and I just had our 1 year wedding anniversary. I should preface that by saying that wedding was at City Hall. It was not the way our wedding was supposed to be. We are actually one of those couples that were affected with the pandemic. So our wedding was supposed to be in May of last year in Italy. And we went to City Hall last year on a February in sweatpants. I was not wearing makeup. I did not brush my hair. It was not cute. And we were viewing that as paperwork so that we could have our wedding in Italy. And then 3 weeks before our wedding was supposed to happen, the whole world shut down and the pandemic hit. So we had to move our wedding from May until to October of last year. And then we moved it from October to May of this year. And then we just moved it from May to August of this year. So while we are married, we have not had a wedding. And it is, you know, it's our dream wedding. It's something that's very important to us. So one of the things that keeps us up all night at night is wondering if August 27th this year, we will be able to have a wedding. What is the state of the world? Will people feel comfortable traveling? Like when can we actually have our wedding? That is kind of something that's just always hovering in the background and is, you know, not the best feeling in the world for sure. And then in terms of work, not in a bad way, it keeps me up at night, but I just, I think one of the absolute best things about working at Scentbird and working for my co-founder and CEO, Maria, is that she has a very different perspective to innovation than most other companies. So I had worked at some rather large companies. I was heading up product development for Complexion, for Bare Minerals for several years prior to joining Scentbird. And, you know, and most large organizations, they'll say, we want true new innovation, something that the world's never seen. You come up with this idea and you show it to them and they say, oh, that's really cool, but it's a little bit too new. Like that's too risky for us. So we'll wait a little while and we'll see if, you know, one or two other brands do it. And if they do it and it's successful, then we'll do it. We don't want to be first to market. We want to be third to market. Whereas Maria, when we come up with ideas, she says, has anyone done this before? And she only wants to make it if nobody has. So it opens up all of this creative freedom, really, that, you know, us as developers, it's really all you ask for your entire career. So to have the creative freedom to literally be able to make anything you want is really wonderful. But it also puts a little bit of pressure because you want to make sure that what you're coming up with is genuinely super cool, super new, will kind of stop people in their tracks and make them say, oh my gosh, like this is dope. I've never seen anything like this. How did you come up with that idea? And so for me, I've been doing this, like I said, for a long time.
So there's always like a weird fear in the back of my head. Like, what if this is my last good idea? What if I can't think of anything good ever again? Which thankfully, knock on wood, hasn't happened so far. But I think it's just my wheels are always turning, thinking about what do I wish existed that isn't there right now? And how could I make it? And how could I make it really cool?
Yeah. So I want to go back really quick to the whole wedding debunkle. I feel you on that because my best friend, she literally has the same exact scenario as you. She was supposed to get married in Italy last September. She moved it to May of this year. And then I think in December, you know, I don't think Italy's borders are even open, at least to Americans.
Not yet.
So she moved it to next year. And I just feel for her. And she did the same thing as you. She went to City Hall because they were like, you know what, let's just do the paperwork. But she hasn't had her dream wedding yet. So I know it must be so difficult. But I'm hoping and just like sending positive vibes that it will all work out this year. And then going back to what you were saying with the creative rut, I didn't even think about that. It must be like you must experience pressure in trying to come up with the latest and best product because as we know in the beauty industry, there is so much competition and it is such an industry that is constantly changing. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, there is so much you can do. And I feel like it is a field where creativity is obviously welcome and there are almost like no limits and rules because you create your own. So that must be fun as well.
I feel like I have the best job in the world. I love it so much. And a lot of the pressure is pressure I put on myself, but I agree with what you're saying. I mean, we're in an era with literally anybody can start a makeup brand, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay.
Yeah. And then I know that under Scentbird, you guys have all these different brands. So how are you personally juggling and balancing the time that you're putting in? Or like, what specifically are you working on?
I work on everything. Okay. I'm not by myself. I have a wonderful, wonderful team behind me. And they are brilliant and passionate and creative and dedicated and really are the ones who are, you know, running the day to day. And my job is more to kind of mentor and teach and guide them. But it's really about helping them finesse and fine tune their wonderful, brilliant ideas and make it, you know, something that all consumers can relate to or would want to try and help them kind of take their brainchilds and birth them into the world.
Yeah, that must be so fun though. I feel like you guys have to have a really good team though, because there's so many moving parts. It must be like difficult if there's just like a lot of, you know, like the quote, what is it, like a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So this podcast is called The City Confessions. And the reason why is because, so I'm a native New Yorker. I started this podcast about 2 years ago. And the reason is I was like walking around the city and I just took a moment and was like looking around and I was like, wow, there are so many people here. Obviously, we are a melting pot. Everybody wants to come to New York. This city is just so diverse. And I felt like everybody's stories were valid and just really interesting. And I wanted to just sit down with people who are doing amazing things in New York like yourself. But I thought it would be fun to also ask people to share a confession. So I want to preface this by saying that there's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad. This is a non-judgment-free zone. And you can share whatever you want. I've had guests share something really personal and deep. I've had people share more lighthearted confessions. So it's however you receive this question. But Janice, if you were to share a city confession, what would that be? And take as long as you want.
I'm trying to think of
some of the questions that I think might be helpful are like, what is one misconception you think people have of you? Or what is one thing you wish people asked more about you or knew about you? Or do you have any like secret talents, any surprising facts. So any of those questions, if they like bring something to your mind.
One thing I wish people. So.
I know I kind of just threw that at you. That's like the only question that I know I ask my guests, but sometimes it's not that I'm trying to stump you. It's just sometimes people come so rehearsed, which is fine. But this platform for me is very casual, super natural.
So one thing, I guess, that I get a lot or is a common misconception of me, and I'm trying to phrase this so I don't sound like too much of a jerk, is I get a lot of times, I personally think that I'm a very like kind, loving, fun person. But I am also a New Yorker. So I think that I am not always aware of the way I present myself potentially. So what I get often from people who are like my dear friends now are them saying, we were terrified of you when we first met you. Like you seem like the most stereotypical, like hardened New York person that we've ever met. And we were really scared that like you would eat us alive. And then after knowing me for a couple weeks, they're like, I have no idea why I was scared of you. You're like the sweetest person that existed. But I think that's just, I don't know. I think for me, like coming from being from here, I'm always a little bit wary of people at first. And I'm like, you prove that you're trustworthy and that I can be like myself around you. And more often than not, people do, and then everything's fine. But I get that a lot. People are like, you are very scary, and I would never want to cross you. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I'm not gonna like eat your children. It's okay.
Trust me, I get that a lot all the time, especially through like if people stumble across my profile on Instagram and they meet me and they're always like, oh my God, you're so nice. Or like, oh, I didn't know that you'd be so approachable. And I'm like, wait, do I come off like that? And I think New Yorkers just have a way of delivering some things. I definitely think I am, yes, extremely blunt. I'm working on my delivery, but it's so funny because it's like New Yorkers get each other. Like, I feel like I would never think, I would never take somebody's, you know, responses or whatever personally, but from other people, I can see how it might be a little dismissive or just, you know, not so pleasant, but
we just do things differently here. That's all.
We just have a way of operating. It's just like the New York blood in us, you know.
when we travel anywhere, my husband, you know, before the pandemic used to be in LA often for his job, and sometimes I would go with him, and without fail, within 10 minutes of getting off the plane and being in the airport, someone would come up to me and be like, you're not from here, are you? No,
I know.
You feel the need to ask me that.
It's very obvious to spot a New Yorker.
Yeah.
But I just want to take a moment right now to appreciate your presence, for saying yes to being a guest and to just allotting time in your busy schedule to come and record with me and to talk with my listeners. I always think it's like time is so valuable and it's a gift. So when people give me access to their time and their schedule, because it's something that you will never get back. So I hope these last 33 minutes were well spent.
But I so enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you. So yeah, I just wanted to send my appreciation for you. And before you wrap up, I just have two more questions. So the second to last is, what is the one thing you love most about yourself? Because we are all about ending on a positive note on this podcast.
I think the thing I love the most about myself is two things. I think I am. It's so funny because the thing I love about myself now is something that I did not like about myself when I was younger. Because I think people who are creative see the world differently, and it's part of their inspiration and what makes them creative and interesting. But it's also can be one of those things that when you're younger, makes you feel a little bit like an outcast, because you don't view or look at things or have the same opinions or perspectives as like the vast majority of people around you. So I think, you know, that is something that I have finally come to really love and appreciate about myself, is that I do see things differently and I have a different outlook and a more creative mind. And I think that has allotted me to be able to have essentially my dream career, which is really wonderful for me. And I think the other thing I really appreciate about myself is my determination to succeed and do well in my field.
Those are such great traits. So thank you for sharing. And as we are wrapping up, this is your time to plug away. So tell us what you are working on, if you can, if there are any secret projects you can reveal, and what can the world be on the lookout from you, Janice, personally, or from Scentbird within the next 3 months, 6 months, in the rest of 2021?
Okay, so I'm going to do a couple plugs. deckofscarlet.com. My latest child was just born into the world. Her name is Metal Leaf Shadow Pot. It is the most beautiful cream putty hybrid metallic eyeshadow you'll ever get your hands on. Everyone should go check it out. You will not be sorry. Goodhabitskin.com. We just launched a brand new night mask and moisturizer that is clinically proven to change your skin overnight. Everyone go out and check her out. She's a beautiful child of mine. She also just launched. And for Scentbird, we have I don't know if I'm supposed to say this or not. I hope I don't get in trouble. We're rebranding, doing a full website overhaul. We're going to change up our packaging. We're doing some really, really, really exciting things that will start coming to fruition towards the end of the year. On the Scentbird platform that I think is going to make the biggest difference in the world and really make everyone take notice. And we're really, really excited about that.
Awesome. And don't worry, guys, I will leave all of the links in the show notes. So be sure to check that out and follow all of their socials. Again, it will be in the description. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Janice, thank you so much for being on again.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I hope you guys are doing well. Have a great day, weekend, whenever you're listening to this, and stay tuned for next week's episode. All right, bye.
Bye.